Welcome to our new podcast, In the Hunt, powered by GameForge. Here's part three of our sit-down conversation, and we're joined with Joe Hallett, friend of the show. Enjoy.
I think we should ask Joe Hallett what he thinks.
Joe Hallett thinks a lot of different things.
Joe's in the house.
Joe's in the house. Joe Hallett, for those of you
in the house.
Yeah, Joe is he's a co-host.
I don't know what's behind me here. That's the problem. Yeah.
Very echoey, though.
So Joe Hallett is a LPGA tour player coach. He works with Stacy Lewis, who is now the Solheim Cup captain, which is something Joe's known for the past month but has not told any of us. Thank you, Joe. Keep the secret. So, Joe, you use GameForge with your tour players.
Yes, I do. And amongst other things, at the beginning of this year, and it's something that, I mean, it's a great tool and it's a great resource, but the two gentlemen that are between us on the screen are the resource that even as a coach, when things get, you're like, what am I missing in the picture here? That's the greatest resource, is to kind of be able to drop Brian or Mark a text and go, am I looking at the right thing? But from this year going forward, any player that I have that is serious about wanting to turn professional, this is a non-negotiable item for me. They have to have some sort of stat tracking program. And I prefer that they have this because it's going to avoid them going down rabbit holes. It's going to make their journey faster. And the proof, obviously, Mark, I mean, every week I am out there, I stop by and I chat with Brittany Altomare, who to me is the poster child for what this does for your game. She always knows where her game is at. She always knows what she's supposed to work on. She'll be the first person to tell you, I don't outdrive everybody. I don't compress the ball harder than anybody. I can out-putt a lot of people out there, but I know the putts I need to make. And like you guys were talking about the P6s, that's just an amazing stat. I think, Mark, you told me once you had a parent that was saying something about, oh, my kid's short game is great. And you gave him like 10 of the most simple chips you could ever have, not a short side or anything. And he got one within 6 feet. And just knowing where that discussion starts to go, look, maybe your kid's better at really tough shots, which could be true, but boy, you're passing away from normal. So it's, by the way, I hadn't thought of the lollipop thing, but I'm picking up a bag at CVS today next time I go out there.
You feel better. Ryan Bailey.
Joe, there's a stat I'll share the person, but a LPGA player who's very, very well known for her putting. As I looked at her stats, her putting was average. Her P6 for the last 12 rounds was like 95%.
Whoa.
An insane number. I've never seen that before in my life.
Wow.
So she's making 95% 6 feet and in?
Basically, every time she misses a green, she doesn't miss a whole lot of greens, but every time she misses, she's inside 6 feet, basically.
Yeah.
Which means her bogey number was tiny.
Right.
Like so, insane numbers.
So Joe mentioned Brittany. What happened there?
From the beginning?
Well, the Cliff Notes version. We're going to try to finish before five.
Brian works with Brittany, but the big thing with Brittany was, like Joe said, she's not the longest driver. So if you want to go out and be a top 20 player, being an average length driver, you've got to fill the gap somewhere else as best as you can. And she's done it very well with putting, but you know, you hit a ceiling at some point where you can't really putt much better. And then the only thing left is short game proximities. Right? You just got to hit it closer. You got to chip it closer when you miss the green.
And you then know, what about her par five performance?
What's that?
Her par five performance.
When she finished second in, this was actually a struggle because I always said, you know, your go forwards need to be a certain number. You need to be ideally two under on your par fives during the round. And she, like a lot of people, kind of grew up with the layup and be safe and go to 100 and be comfortable and make par on your par fives. And the whole point was, well, no, we need to, you know, you've got to make a ton of birdies. You're not going to get them if you play the par fives like a par four. So she played Canada a couple of years ago where she finished second. You remember that, Joe? She was second in Canada. She shot, I think, 22 under and 20. She was 20 under on the par fives and 22 under overall. And there are five par fives on that course. But still, she basically made all of her scoring on the par fives. And that was the perfect example. She's like, I never thought I would shoot 22 under in my life. But amazingly, 20 of the 22 were par five birdies.
Well, and you know, John, and I was listening to everything before. The one thing that GameForge does for me is, and the coolest thing now is to kind of be able to see the trends. It's always telling me what the lowest hanging fruit is. And from that aspect, it's many times it's like talking to the caddy of the player. You know, you see that they struggled and you give them a text and say, hey, you know, give me a heads up. Did you see anything out there? And, you know, it, just from a basic standpoint, gosh, you know, they couldn't get lined up square at all today or anything, right? But sometimes you'll hear from a caddy and it'll go, they're going to complain about their eight iron, but it's not their eight iron that's killing them. It's the wedges that keep coming up 20 and 30 feet short. And it's kind of like GameForge is that caddy in the background who goes, after you guys discuss this, bring the wedges into the conversation and discuss that, because we all know from a playing standpoint, there is something that we could hit the driver great all day. And if we absolutely block one right and hit it out of bounds, that's the topic of discussion after a competitive round. And, you know, and it's the caddy who's there and goes, I haven't seen that shot in 9 months. I'm not worried about it. It was an outlier. What I am worried about is this. And that's what I can add to the data, that I'm going to just pick up the basics. But now I can see, okay, you know what? We're not getting as many in positions. We're not getting the P6s the way we used to. And that immediately tells me, like Mark, you said, is it a technique issue, or do we just need more practice in a different variety of conditions? You know, and then the questions become much easier. You know, you kind of look and say, you know, back when you played at Boca, I walked that golf course. There are not many flat lies around the green. So all of a sudden now, when you go out and practice for your P6s, you're not just chipping off a flat area. You're going to go and you're going to put the ball above your feet, below your feet, uphill, downhill, and you're going to make sure that technique is correct. It makes me a better instructor, which I like. It makes me look smarter, which no one believes. So it's really good on both of those tools.
Yeah, but there's some history there. There's certain reasons why people have that belief. Now, so Joe, what has game? So you've been doing this a long time. You've been out on tour for a lot of years. You have a number of Solheim Cup players who you have instructed, you know, over the years. With Stacy involved with Solheim Cup now, I assume you're going to also have some kind of role going forward. What has GameForge shown you as an instructor that you just didn't really buy into or believe before?
Well, I think the thing that Mark and Brian talked about in the beginning, and it's sort of and Brian will crack up laughing at this, but it's
because
when it first came out, when it first came out, it was, I understood it, I got it, and it made total sense. But when you go to a competitor or a player or a team of a caddy and a player, and you go, I have another thing I'd like you to do after the round. You get a little bit of an eye roll, and it's like, okay, we're already writing this down. We're already doing that down. We're already doing that down. And the simplicity of this was, and I know I could share her name because even she would chuckle about it, who played the tour for 10 years, Sandra Changaja. The first time she used it, she goes, it's too complicated. It took forever to enter it. And the first question on it, what was your score? And it says in big letters, in relation to par. And Sandra didn't play that well that day, and she wrote down 74. So the computer thought she was 74 over par, which even it was having problems finding a good area in any of that. But in the beginning, it was, oh, it's something extra for us to do. Oh, it's something extra for us to study. Oh, it's something extra that we have to sit down that takes away from time on the tee. The input, as Brian and Mark have said, is 90 seconds is if you're writing it in cursive with a fountain, you know, a fountain pen, getting it perfect. It is so simple. It is so easy to input. And then most of the onus can go on the coach, where you really, in a way, it's a TrackMan of stats where you go, don't look at that machine. Let me look at the machine and let's have a conversation. And that gets to be the easy stuff, as, you know, what do you say we practice putts over 30 feet? Wouldn't it be fun to make some of those? And then you hear the player go, God, I haven't made a bomb in ages. Here we go. Now we're, you know, all it is for our job as the instructor is, can you kind of create that little motivation in them to go, all right, make up a game? And God bless you, Mark and Brian, I won't have to make up a game. I just kind of scroll through the 1,200 plus games and drills you got and go, here's a couple. Let's see what we can do.
I think Sandra was a cool story because Joe called me to talk to her one day. We're walking through stats.
Yes.
And she was not putting well, but technique-wise was really good, but wasn't putting well. And I was like, well, in Game Forge, we do something called bip rate. Bip rate means birdies to in positions. How often do you birdie every time you hit it within 20 feet? On tour, it's about a 60% make rate. Collegian, you're in the upper 40s. And she was putting like a collegian, but she's trying to play professional. And I'm like, we've got to get you making more than 50%. Can't not be under this number. And she was like, that's too high. It's too high. Da, da, da. And to her credit, she didn't do any technique work. All she did is said, all right, I'm going to drop 10 balls between basically 3 feet and 20 feet. And my goal is to make six. And she struggled for about a week and then finally figured it out. And then I think she won two or three in a row and her bip rate was above 60%. So to me, it's like the 4 minute mile, right? Nobody could beat it until they did. And then once they understood what was achievable, people beat it, right? Well, putting's the same way. If you think your standard is good, you think you're a good putter and you're hitting a certain number, you're not going to push yourself to that next level. What does that look like? So just by rearranging her goal and setting a new goal, forced her out of her comfort zone, made her perform better. And then, like I said, she went and won a couple events on the Eglin's tour or whatever, one of the many tours leading into the LPGA. But again, it's just that concept. If you don't know, you just don't know. And a lot of us as coaches, and I'll be honest, 4 or 5 years ago, I didn't know. I was guilty.
And we've had a number of tour players push back on how many putts they need to make. European Tour, PGA Tour, they're like, nah, that's too high. And you go, okay, well, let's have a look. Let me show you what winners are doing. Let me show you what top 10 are doing every single week. They're hitting these numbers. And people are like, shit. You know, you want to be out there. This is what they're doing out there.
And in the chat, I gave you the make percentages. So the average tour player from 9 to 20 feet is making 30%. So they're making 3 out of 10 putts between 9 and 20 feet. The average collegians are a little over 20. So again, that shows you kind of that gradual step. So a junior is about 15 to 20, you know, a higher handicap is getting under 10%. So again, this is showing you that progress. So for those that are coaching future collegians, aspiring professionals, it's not too early to say our goal, you know, we're in the 70s now. Our goal is we've got to get to 30%. Let's come up with a way to do that. Inside of GameForge as well, we have assessments that for putting that basically tracks, gives you feedback on that. Starts to tell you long, short, left, right, misses, whatever. Gives you that data. Again, just more information to provide that. But again, these are our goals. This is what we have to, if our goal is to play professionally, we've got to get to 30% on average or be a little bit better at ball striking or something crazy, but we have to do this. So what is our plan to get there? And again, this is a great conversation.
Really good there, Brian, is like, if I'm a mid 70s to 80 shooter, right, and I'm out there at 10 feet and I'm making 1 out of 4 putts, I'm doing what that range should do. I think the expectation of the player sometimes is way beyond what the realistic fact is, right?
You always have to ask them. You know, every player, my goal as a coach is my player needs to be informed. So when we're at a certain zone, I'm like, what should you be making here? What's your goal? I don't know. Well, if you don't know, then we've hit it. Here's a lollipop. Perfect. Right. We've got to know what our goal is.
Let's go have a beer.
Yeah, let's go have a beer. It'll be just as much accomplished over that beer if we actually talk these numbers and we actually get on this putting green. But again, they've got to understand what's good and what's not. You know, they've got to say, my average is 30%, which means in a drill, I'm going to do 20 one time and I'm going to do 40 the next time. My average is 30. I've got to understand what I do and how it gets done. And then I got to set my goals to reach that next level. And again, a lot of touring professionals don't do it because they just don't know. You know, a lot of us coaches don't know. And it just kind of, you know, works the way back. The worst thing you can do is listen to a lot of the guys on the television during a round because they just talk nonsense. But again, you've got to say, these are your expectations. And again, what are we trying to achieve? Again, Mark, talk about, you can have a player that just wants to talk on the range with you, wants to just chat it up, you know, just kind of that kind of golfer. GameForge is not for them, you know, chat them up, have a good time. But if you have a player that wants to perform, wants to compete, wants to get better, and more so wants to win at whatever level they're at, we can show you how to do it.
Well, the thing is, like, at 10 feet, a person who's shooting in the 80s is making 1 out of 5 putts. That's what they do.
Yeah.
Right. And so if they're complaining about that, there's really no complaint. That's what somebody at your ability level does. And I think helping players set realistic expectations is what it's all about, right? Because yeah. Most of the people that I see who want to improve, they're always denigrating their games. Right? There's a lot of self-abuse, right? And when it gets really bad, sometimes I'll start beating them up, right? They'll hit shots and I'll say, could you hit it any worse? And I'll do this for 3, 4, 5, 6 shots. And finally, they look at me and they said, are you enjoying yourself? And I said, well, that's what I hear you doing all the time. That's what you sound like to yourself.
Oh, I bet you it was worse.
Oh, yeah. And it's just like, that's, you know, so they're always beating themselves up over, even though they're, you know, as an 80 shooter, I should only make 1 out of, you know, 5 at 10 feet. So I think that's really important for them to understand. That's what that ability level does. Because I think the expectations across, and you probably see it with tour players, Joe and Brian and Mark, you probably see it with tour players, right? The expectation level is much different than the reality.
No, every practice session I'm in, my players have assessments. We're doing it. Here's an assessment. How many putts are we going to make here? What's our goal? I had a text message yesterday. I have a lesson from a player out of state coming in, and she shared with me her last couple practice sessions. And she goes, I'm putting like a collegian, but I'm still not where I need to go in tour. She's 13. Like, she's like, I'm already collegiate level. I got that. My goal is to play. Like, so she's like, I'm making this many putts. I'm a good collegian right now. Again, her goal is tour. She understands it. So inside of training, everything she does, she understands what she has to do. And that's the player I love to work with, because now it's fun. Now we can start moving pieces and get them to where they want to go. You know, it's much for a coach, I'm much more satisfied.
Does it surprise any of you how long it takes for somebody to become a good putter?
I think
some people are quicker than others.
Yeah.
People are quicker than others. Some people, it's a light switch. They've got good speed and motion. You just give them a good read and it's game over. And others, you got to piece together a few more pieces than that.
You know, and Mark, and I know you and Brian know this too, as well as you, John, but it's kind of sometimes if you can describe to a highly competitive player who's, you know, it's kind of like, okay, even you're watching as a coach and you're going, they're putting awful, which, you know, cannot come out of your mouth at any point, but it's kind of be like, let's work on this length putt. But you literally go from missing speed wise, long and short, to kind of getting it around the hole, you know, and it's kind of, it's this little journey where your second putt is a longer way away. We're improving. Your second putt is now a tap in. And then they get to that dreaded area where they're like, I'm not making anything. Everything lips out on me. We're on the journey to a better putter. And that's when having the facts behind it help you really highlight and go, let's not miss any of these putts on the low side and see what happens. Let's work in that. Brian, like you and Mark were sharing, let's really work in that 4 to 7 foot area so that when you hit it there for birdie, you don't take it for granted. You put the same effort and the same role on it you do with a par putt. And I mean, some players just don't even understand what that journey looks like. They just assume they're going to go from being a bad putter to making everything. And it doesn't work that way. Not that I've ever seen. I don't know about you guys.
Make percentages climb much slower than technique.
You know, and the other thing that's beautiful about Game Forge, especially in the putting aspect, is I had the it's kind of like you can start out nice, then you can kind of hit to the facts. And John, like you, it's like, okay, now I'm going to belittle you as bad as you belittle. And by the way, now let's look at the absolute data and see how pathetic it really is. That's maybe a softer journey. And I had a chance to ask Jackie Burke once if it was a true story as I sat in the putting green outside of the pro shop. And he said, the one with Billy Ray Brown. And I said, yes. And apparently he had watched Billy Ray Brown go out and just lacklusterly hit some 5 foot putts. And he was making about half of them. And Jackie walked out and said, young man, give me your putter. And then he open handed him and slapped him in the face. And it said, it should hurt when you miss a 5 footer, and went right back into the pro shop. Oh, and he said his make percentage went up and he put a little more care into each one of those. So somewhere between that and a soft journey.
That's right.
That's Jackie Burke. Hey, there's certain things
Brian's
we just don't
working his way
anymore.
Towards that. Also,
I'm slowly getting there.
Brian will be there pretty soon.
He's going to send me a lollipop one day.
Brian's giving lollipops out, right?
Yeah.
So, Joe, would you say as a tour coach and you teach high level collegians, you're down there at the Legends at Vanderbilt. So, you know, you see all the college players there, right? That's their home for the men and ladies teams. That the GameForge gives you. It kind of gives you a framework from which to work from. So you're not guessing anymore.
Yeah. And you definitely know what's walking up to you on the practice tee from the things that you couldn't see if you weren't able to see them play or you're not able to see them practice.
And it's factual data.
That's huge to kind of go, all right, what would his miss be on the course based on what's happening on the practice tee? That's gigantic for an instructor.
And then you can access your players' accounts as a coach.
Yes.
So they can't.
And I can adjust how many drills, you know, and there's some like, well, there's so many. And finally, I think I'm trying to convince Brian to put down a once a month button just to get him to do something.
We can do that.
And then, Mark, talk about how does one use GameForge? Subscription-based?
Yeah, subscription-based. It's $9.99 a month or $99 a year.
And then you have a 30-day trial period for somebody
30-day
wants
trial.
To try
you can go there and do all you want for 30 days. There's a iOS app, so it's easier to put the scores in through the app. So I highly recommend everybody who's entering scores use that. But it's also got drills and assessments in the app as well, which are cool.
And you can also go onto the website if you're on a laptop at home at night or whatever.
Yeah. You can do the website also if you want.
Yeah, and what I thought was kind of cool was like, because, you know, we're not in play mode up here, but I could go in right now and I was talking to Brian about this. I could put in, you know, rounds of golf that, you know, I could just kind of make bogus rounds of golf and get an idea of what I need to do. Like if I put in a round that shoots 85, that'll tell me more about my 85 player. If I put in a round of golf, it's 90, or if I put a round of golf and it's 74, you know, and so I can get different ideas about what those people need. And so I can plan for my season as well.
Yeah. There's also benchmarks in there for all those different scoring levels, which I can show you where to find them if you want. But yeah, you can go in there and say, depending on my player's scoring level, what type of player they are, it'll tell you pretty clearly what each one of their benchmarks are.
Well, I think the benchmarks would be really helpful in designing, you know, the program for the members going forward, right? You know, you have the people, your members that come out to work through the season, they're starting their season. So, you know, you get a number of scores in there. When do you feel the data gets legitimate? How many rounds of golf do you need in there to trust the data? Because you're going to have the guy 10. Who goes out and has that, you know, 74, but that's a weird round.
Yeah. I mean, we like to see 10. We'll start at it 6 or 8, but we really want to see 10 rounds.
10 rounds and you're getting, because the outliers are going to get washed out.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. One or two rounds is definitely not enough, but people go put past rounds in if they remember them. Mm-hmm. We do that a lot with players. We'll grab old data and just preload it with their old data. So they know where they're starting.
Right. And Mark, from a standpoint of, you know, you developed Aimpoint, you know, because you can write software. How have you worked with the Aimpoint in the GameForge arena?
Well, we can see sometimes pretty obviously from the GameForge numbers is depending on somebody's putting conversion profile. A lot of times, and we can also see speed control and proximities and things like that. A lot of times you can tell when it's a speed problem versus a read problem. Like if you see people with good proximity, good speed, and they're just not making anything, it's probably a read problem. Right. And then we've had players we've tracked pre aim point and then they've learned aim point and post aim point. So there was a pro, the one guy we were talking about earlier, and then some European tour players who started aim point while they were using it. And we could very, very clearly see the difference in make percentage, which converts into the difference in scoring, which converts to the difference in money. Right. But the whole idea is, are you better for using aim point or not? And the answer was a very, very resounding yes. But there's ways that, you know, putting is obviously not just read, but it's a big component of it. And you can have the best motion in the world and the best speed in the world, which nobody does, but you have the perfect motion and make nothing if your reads are bad. If your reads are even okay, you're not going to make nearly what you need to make.
And you've been doing a lot of consulting with both players and caddies off of the PGA and the LPGA tour recently, have you, with the green books being banned?
Yeah, more than ever in my life, the last 3-4 months, I'd say.
Now, we were talking the other night about a previous PGA championship winner that you were working with. And what would you say in working with a player at that high level, what surprised you about their perceptions of their putting?
What surprises me even at that level, that some of their concepts are bad. Not necessarily motion concepts, how to move the putter, but just green reading concepts. Some of them are just flat wrong about some of their concepts, just wrong. You know what I mean? And if your concepts are bad, it's hard to get past that. So we've, our model is you got to start with good concepts. Then process is next. Is your process good? And then it gets into motion and things like that. But so I spend more time than you would think just cleaning up concepts on things like grain, double breaks, what the ball does kind of 4 to 6 feet, how the break changes. Like a lot of people just don't know. They just flat don't know. Even at a very high level of golf, they just don't know.
And there's probably no reason they would, though, right? They've never been trained with it.
You would think, well, no, but I mean, usually at a high level, at tour levels, usually their strokes are pretty darn good. Like they have little biases here and there, but it's not a stroke problem by the time you get to PGA Tour, and they all blame their stroke, and it's usually not a stroke problem. It's usually a read problem and a speed problem. And once their read's good, it's almost always a speed problem at that point. It's always just didn't match speed up.
And we have a number of competitive players sitting on the call this morning. And I spent time with you and Brian and Joe a few weeks ago when we were in Orlando. Talk to us about that 4 to 6 foot range, which are basic your cleanup birdie putts or your really good chips for par, right?
Yeah. So what people don't understand there is, the make percentages across the board tank between 4 and 6 feet. Like on PGA Tour, it's 90% from 4 feet, and then by the time you get to 6 feet, it drops to by the time you get to 5 feet, it's 1 in 5. Well, 3 feet is 98%, 5 feet is 80%. So they go from missing 1 in 50 to missing 1 in 5 in a 2 foot window, right? And what's happening kind of 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 feet is the break is expanding very quickly, meaning it's growing very fast. So the demonstration I always give is you take a kind of an average little 4 foot putt, read it, hit it right in the middle, back up 1 foot, try to play the same break at the same speed, and half the time it's going to lip out low. Go back one more foot and you miss the hole. So in that little 2 foot window, the break is growing enough that if you keep trying to play the same break, you're missing, and you're missing badly. And so you have to understand how fast is that rate breaking? How important is the length of the putt? If you don't know you're at 6 feet versus 5 feet, you could be misreading a lot of putts just because you're not aware of it.
So just the fact that you know what a 4 foot putt is, a 5 foot putt, and a 6 foot putt versus a 3 foot putt, right? That makes a big difference.
Probably 4 to 6. 4 to 6 is really the magic range.
Because that's the cleanups.
So we talked about P6 earlier. You don't have a whole lot. I mean, when you miss the green, your par save is usually not inside 3 feet. It's usually 4 to 6 first and 7 to 12 next. Not the little baby tap-ins. That's not where we are. And one of the best putters I've ever worked with, every lesson we spent 20 to 25 minutes, 4 to 6 feet only. And she won many, 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 many tournaments because she would never give up shot. It's 6 feet in for par. She was making them all day long and other players were missing. And that just gave her such a huge advantage because she so clearly understood it.
One of the, who I think is one of the best putters on tour right now is Xander Schauffele, right? And his percentage of make was like inside 10 feet. He was 90% for the year. And that's just blows me away that somebody could be that good at that point. That's a lot. Well, I mean, yeah.
I don't even know what to say about that. That's a lot.
That crushed the category, right?
Oh yeah. That's a category kill. Now they rarely do that 2 years in a row, to be fair. I might be wrong about him, but like, I know, even the year Spieth was like insanely high from outside 20 feet. He didn't do it the following year.
And why do you think somebody might be why do you think somebody's good from 10 to 20 feet, but not good from 4 to 10 feet? Any particular reason? Anything you see with the better players you work with?
Couple things. They just don't understand what's going on inside 4, 5, 6 feet. They change their speed up. So they have different speeds for short putts than longer putts, which is a problem. And a lot of players like seeing more break or less break. So when they get farther out, they like the look of a big breaking putt, and they're not comfortable on the straighter, shorter putts. And some it's vice versa. Some it's the opposite. So if you grew up with steep greens, you like seeing a lot of break. If you grew up on flat greens, you like seeing a very small amount of break. And so there's ranges there they prefer. But a lot of times I see it's the shorter ones. They just try to play them too straight and too hard, and it just doesn't work.
You know, one of our friends there, Dr. Farnsworth, is working with DJ, right? And I was listening to some stuff that DJ was sharing, and he said on his straight putts, he likes to use the line on the ball because he likes to see break.
Most players don't like straight putts, in my experience. They always.
He says he's uncomfortable with it. That's the only time he uses the line on his ball, because he has to see it as straight, because he keeps wanting to add break to it.
Yeah. I've seen that a lot from better players. They're very uncomfortable accepting that it could actually be straight. There's not a whole lot of straight putts outside 6 or 7 feet, to be honest, but there are some.
Right. And I would say higher handicaps that struggle short versus long. I think a lot of that is they have a technique piece that's wrong. So on a short putt, it's happening in such a short area and a short time frame that there's not a lot of wiggle room. But on a longer putt, they have a chance to maybe, with the length of putt, they can override the face and they do some goofy stuff to try to like bring it back into, you know, a reasonable launch condition. So I think a lot of times for a higher handicap, I think the time that they have to move the putter is actually a benefit, where shorter putts, they tend to get really short, really jabby, really fast.
Yeah.
And the longer putts, that gives them more time to do what they need to do to get the putter back on the ball pretty well. So, you know, so that would be, and again, the beauty of this is when you see the numbers, this is where you get to be a coach, right? Why is this happening? I know we're underperforming. What's happening, and where can I provide my value to get them better? And I think that's the beauty of all this. And coaching wise, one thing we can give you, if your player is using full stats in the system, we do a strikeout or by distance bends what they're hitting. And we show you on average, this is what we would expect them to hit at 20 feet and in, what their impositions are. And what I've come to find out, how I've helped more players, and I don't do long game, but how I've improved more long players better, just by saying, what are the 5 shots you have the most? And are you hitting your number? You know, at 130 yards, 50% of your shots should be 20 feet and in. Are you hitting that number? If that's a shot you have a lot, are 50, and if not, we need to train and get that better, right? So like I said, so we call that kind of the core five. Like, here are the 5 shots you have the most. 70% of all your shots on the golf course come from this distance. You better be daggone good here, because if not, you're giving away shots. And that's really where we see a lot of times with tour players, and more so collegians, there's zones where they are way below. They have a huge density and they're way under. And that's where we're missing those in positions. That's where you as a coach can provide value instantaneously and say, from 130 to 40, what is that? Is it a gap in equipment? You know, did your wedge get bent? Like, why is this not something that we can accomplish? So again, I think the beauty of the system is it just, again, you can highlight and give them a very specific, go work on this, go work on these zones. Here's the numbers, and then watch how that moves all the other pieces. So that's a great for all you long swing guys. Figure out the 5 shots that they have the most, or even look at the next tournament they're going to play and say, these are the 5 shots you're probably going to have the most. Maybe this is what we need to work on going in the next event, instead of let's just hit a bunch of 6 irons. Well, that might help you, but I might only hit 1 6-iron this next tournament, right? So we've got to start making this smart evaluations on what can we do to move players. And again, it's just going back and understanding offense, defense. I got to make birdie. What does that look like? Defense, what does that look like? And train and get prepared to what you're getting ready to go see. If you do that, you become a performance coach at that point, right? You're preparing them to perform for their next event, opposed to let's work on, can we hit up on this ball? Let's work on ground motion. Let's work on angle of attack, all pieces that matter. But when you're really talking about performance, it's more than just that. So if you want to start taking that step, we give you every avenue to get there.
Well, the thing is, you give us all the stats, and then we can interpret the stats as we want to. But every one of us is going to be involved, like Joe, you know, with good players as well as, you know, developing players and even new players. We've got to know how to become a performance coach, right? Because like you said in the beginning, they came to us because they wanted to be better at something, right? And it's not about how well they practice, it's how well they perform.
If you look at any of the, or see any of the interactions between Rick Sessinghaus and Colin Mawakara, I mean, they hardly ever spent any time in the range. It was always on the golf course. And it was always, there was always interaction of, you know, here's a shot I don't have, or how do I get better at this shot? And for those of us that might spend more time on the tee, everything that GameForge brings is that. And that's how someone like Rick becomes such a great performance coach, because not only does he probably have the data, he sees it face on over and over and over again. And for us to be able to see when we're not there, what's happening out there. And at least, you know, the easiest way to say it is it's, you know, it's either green for good or red for bad, or orange to me means, you know, let's just make sure we're moving in the right direction when we start looking at a fast breakdown. But if they come to us with a request and we can help them hit that ball better or further, the next piece is logical. Because if we teach them to hit it further and they don't know how to perform, they're going to hit over about four greens and there is nothing good anywhere in the universe on the backside of a green. They're going to make doubles rather than pars and bogeys. And it's literally, so being able to take whatever technical and then add that piece to go, here's what's going to happen. Let's be prepared for it and let's practice for it.
Now, Joe, should we ask for our pictures and your autograph now before Solheim Cup?
Yes.
Because it'll be less expensive.
They're still free.
right now I'm lobbying to be the head cart driver for one of the assistant captains. That's about my role.
Put me on the list for that also.
Where's the Solheim Cup going to be, Joe?
The Solheim Cup will be in Spain. It's actually a new venue. And as you can imagine, for those of you that may know a little bit about Stacey Lewis, she is a very organized person, and that's part of the thing that she's really going to bring to the team as an organization, so that, you know, there's nothing that pops up accidentally like, oh, we weren't prepared for that. And in the background, she and I, obviously, as Mark and Brian know, have kind of watched her game over the past couple of years and used GameForge. And I know there's a thing that you all haven't even touched on. But, you know, when you start talking about college coaches and teams and maybe seeing not only how can my team operate, but how can they operate cohesively together? How do we know what player is really trending on long, on hitting bombs? How do we know what player is really hitting their P6s? I mean, this type of information is, you know, it's great to understand the psyche and the personality makeups, but to have that little pinch of, hey, here's what's also going on in their game, that could be a big advantage.
And Joe, I'm not lobbying or anything, but we have some phenomenal behind the scenes stuff we do with college players. I'm predicting match play, best matchups. Just saying. You might want to call us
out there too.
Just saying.
matchups are huge and things like this.
Yeah, we got some really cool stuff behind the scenes we've been doing for a couple of years now.
That makes lot of sense, right? Like where somebody, how do the strengths and weaknesses match up?
Yep.
Well, this has been great. Now, for anybody that wants to contact Mark or Brian with relative, you know, to GameForge, it's mygameforge.com is the website. And then the emails are pretty simple. It's either Brian or Mark at mygameforge.com. All right. Joe Howitt's out of this world.
Brian will reply much faster than Mark.
If you'll just send it to inmate number 751 at the Folsom County Prison.
It's much faster return of email.
This has been great, guys. We really appreciate your time, your input. I look forward to using GameForge with my students this season. And Brian, I'll be in touch with questions. And I can't thank you enough for coming on today. Joe, always good to see your smiling face wherever you are.
John, Mark, Brian, thanks as always.
I think he's on SpaceX.
Thank all of you
right
who
now
attended this morning. If you have any questions or anything, you can always email me, and I'll be happy to follow up with these gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. You too. Take care. Thanks, Mark, Brian.
Thank you.
This has been a Fuel production.